Hi everybody, I'm Mike, and I'm your
Right.
speaker getter. When I was looking for a speaker this month, I'm not too much of an out of the box thinker, and I was like, I'm gonna get a speaker. And when I asked our speaker candidate about it, he said, I've got a daughter who's also in recovery, and maybe she'd be interested in sharing her experience, strength, and hope, and let me check with her. And so, what do you know? We have two speakers tonight. We have Elizabeth is going to lead off, and then Pat is going to clean up. Without further ado, Elizabeth, take it away.
Thank you so much. Oh, awesome. Give it for the shorty. Thank you. As he said, my name is Elizabeth and I am an alcoholic.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Woo! Represent. I did Alateen when I was growing up. That was one of the most inviting places, especially for a moody teenager to go to. I walked in and I was really sheepish and shy, and I just the tallest, biggest guy in the room that was kind of one of the proctors for the Alateen meeting asked me, oh, like as if he had met me before. It was just so welcoming. He was just excited to see me, excited to see a new face. But he wrapped me up in his arms and he was like, "Hello, little sister, welcome." And I just remember, I even for a moody teenager, I didn't roll my eyes at that. That just felt really good. For me, it was my biggest qualifier was my mother. She was a little bit of a late bloomer, so she started drinking pretty heavily when I was in middle school. I had an amazing childhood, and it was just kind of starting with middle school that her drinking got pretty bad. There was a lot of embarrassment at PTA meetings. There was a lot of embarrassment where I was just talking to my dad about how it was a really important dinner for me. My very favorite teacher was coming over for dinner. And my mom was blackout drunk the whole time. And I really wanted to impress my teacher. And I made her embarrassing herself all about myself, that it was that oh, she's gonna think that this about my upbringing, she's gonna think this about me, she's gonna think this about me. And so Alateen really helped with that, where I would always notice that my dad was a lot more able to be that she's gonna do what she needs to do. This is the place she can go to. She knows it exists, and that's really all we can do, sweetie. And I remember growing up, I thought it was a little cold sometimes. Like my brain just couldn't wrap around it. Like, what do you mean, just let her do that? What do you mean, just let her do that? Like, we need to stop her like, I am the mascot of our family. Like I gotta be cheering for the right team, and just being in an environment where people were kind of teaching me to let that go, that someone else's image, someone else's brand was my brand, and kind of just discovering what Elizabeth's brand was. And one of my dad and I were talking about this on the car ride here too, where I remember distinctly when my dad and I had decided that I would be a really good bartender. I had a really good personality for it. And so I went to bartending school, and I was so confident. And like my mother, I was a late bloomer as well, where I looked at my dad and I said, "Dad, aren't you so glad that the alcoholism skipped a generation?" And my dad held back. I was telling him how I admired that he wasn't like, yes, thank God, you know, that it was more, yeah, that is nice. And it's really because my drinking career really didn't start until after college. And so I am, and after college was right around when I started bartending. And I worked at a lot of really high-end places. I worked at a lot of really low-end places, high volume, high everything. And let me tell you, I fell in love with the bartending scene. Especially the low-end places, because they especially were saying like, oh yeah, you have a shot now and then, just as long as you're still standing up straight. And I was like, great. You know, it's funny because I remember thinking how I felt as a bartender, was kind of what I thought I felt, now in the rooms, is that how I found my people, the day drinkers. I'm not the only one doing it, like drinking at work, like everyone drinks at work, they're just lying about it. And it apparently was not the case. Yeah, it really started to get bad there for a minute. And of course, I was very, very resistant. I had multiple people for multiple parts of my life. You know, an alcoholic kind of needs to perk up their ears when someone random tells them they might have a drinking problem. Like someone close to you, someone who sees you every day, like, oh, well, you're counting my drinks. That doesn't count. Someone who's kind of an acquaintance, and they're like, I'm worried about you. I kind of would just not talk to people anymore that started to imply that I had a drinking problem. And I just wanted the party to keep going. I think that's what a lot of my friends in the AA rooms can attribute that to. But it also was a lot of pain involved, because my mother passed away from breast cancer right after I got out of college. And just having my foundation be rocked like that, like I just had never even considered my parents' mortality. And so having found my people of the day drinkers at restaurants and country clubs and the like, and private mansion events, I was like, look where I am. There's a crystal sculpture people are taking shots out of. I've made it. I just was lying to myself, lying to people around me, and I just did not want help. And I started going to AA meetings for other people. I really didn't want to go. I wasn't one of those people that in the beginning showed up on my hands and knees and was like, someone teach me. I was like, okay, I'll go to this thing. And I didn't have a car for a while because I totaled two of them. And I unfortunately would get dropped off at the AA meetings, and then there would kind of be, this is my boyfriend, who hadn't started going to Al-Anon yet. He'd kind of be a goalie in the parking lot. Like he would make sure that I wouldn't leave the meeting. It was pretty cute. I hated it so much. It really would be a moment of like where I would kind of peek out and see if he was still in the parking lot, and he'd go like this. But you know, I tried AA. This was right before COVID. Tried to get sober, and then COVID hit, and so then I was really able to use that as excuses, 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 just that, well, I can't even, I've never even met my sponsor in person. I've never even met any of my peers in person. It's all so impersonal. This is really hard. No one else has done it this way. Like I read, when I was reading in the book that we all try to make ourselves individualistic, I really hung on to the fact that I'm like, but I am different, because not everyone has been going through this thing where we're all locked up 24 hours. It didn't work at first. And then I had my dad and my boyfriend approach me, where they These were two people. I wouldn't call them enablers. It's just that they were always there. They like, well, they're not going anywhere. Like they're stuck with me. I'm stuck with them. Like we're in this together, fellas. Because I had already had friends that weren't talking to me anymore. Didn't want to go to bars with me anymore because I would embarrass myself and everyone in there. And so to have these two, the two most important men in my life, approach me. And say, they had already told me, obviously, multiple times for years at that point that I had a problem, but both of them said, we're kind of done. And the apathy, is what scared the crap out of me, was that they both just went, do whatever you want. Like that, just what? Like, aren't you gonna follow me? Be my goalie? Make sure that I'm, make sure that I'm, make sure that I'm, make sure that I'm. That's because my boyfriend started going to Al-Anon, damn it. And my dad kind of put his arms around my boyfriend and was like, you should come to some of these Al-Anon meetings with me. And he started getting healthier. I wasn't able to manipulate him as much as I was used to doing. He said, my dad said, like, I'm not going to come around as much. And my boyfriend said, I'm the one that pays for most of our rent since you always aren't reliable with rent. So technically, because I remember thinking like, oh, he's moving out. And he's like, no, you're moving out. And that I looked at my dad who owns the property and I was like, Dad? And he was like, yeah, he's always on time with rent. Are you kidding me? Just to be kind of kicked out on the street kind of mentality, I kind of decided I needed more than my free will. I didn't have a higher power at that point either. So I called a treatment center, and asked them if they had a bed. And to my dismay, they did. At the time, there was some weird part of me that was hoping it would be like the dentist, where they're just like, "Oh, we can get you in a month, and yay, I have a month to keep doing this, and no one can stop me." But they said, "Yes, we can have you come in tomorrow." And I just, my heart just went down into my stomach, and it's the best thing I ever did. It forced me to really consider the program. Because you get up at 6 a.m., you make sure your bed is made. You go to at least two meetings a day. One of them is with hired psychiatrists and psychologists who are like, what did you really mean by that? Like that crosstalk was allowed because they dissect every little thing we said about it. And it was perfect. And it felt like I was a student. Like I was in college almost when I was in rehab, for a subject that I already knew a lot about because my dad was in program my whole life. So it was kind of nice to have a head start in the when it came to the verbiage of how the program works, when it came to the traditions. For the first time in my life, I was kind of a class pet, and because I wasn't that great of a student. And it felt good. And it kept me there. I lived there on that campus for a year. I made some of the best friends I've ever made in my life. I want to and will travel the world with all these women that I lived with. It's pretty amazing, and a lot of the women in my life also get jealous that I have a dad that's so accepting of me getting sober, so accepting of me being able to go to Al-Anon. Because the wildest thing to me with going to more meetings, going to recovery centers was learning how some people are all by themselves when they're trying to get sober. And that they have really burned all the bridges, or that they have a family member that's like, "Are you sure you want to get sober? I think you're fine." And just to have that on your shoulder where you're like, no, I really need to do this. So just to have family and friends that my dad already had a full bench of people that were kind of giving me the thumbs up that this could work. This is good. This is a good idea. Was really amazing. And I wouldn't change it for anything in the world. And my name is Elizabeth, and I'm not going to drink tonight. Thank you. And now, drum roll, please, Patrick.
Patrick, a grateful member of Al-Anon. It's all I could do to keep from crying. That was just, I'm just so proud of you, sweetie. And I don't know what to say. Let's just adjourn. Can't beat that. It's the joy of my life that my daughter's sober. My other daughter is in Al-Anon. My brother's sober in AA. My dad got sober in AA. There we go. Thank you. My mom was in Al-Anon back in the 50s. And this place has just been home. You know, it just is home. It's where I feel at home. It's where I My family is here. I've got a sponsee here, my sponsor, his wife, my girlfriend, you know. I just can't believe how lucky I am. I do have to tell a couple of quick Liza stories though. And the main one is that, let's see here. The main one is about Alateen. And a lot of you know Liz, who ran Alateen for many years. And we took Liza to her, the Las Encinas Alateen meeting. I don't know, you must have been 9 or 10, pretty young. Drop her off. I went to my AA meeting there at Las Encinas, and she comes running back, you know, after the meeting, and jumps in the car and she goes, "Dad, we're like the Cleavers compared to these people." They're insane. Oh, good. This will be good. And then the other, we just do the whole evening about you. The other one is that she really, really, really was my moment of clarity for Al-Anon. And I've told this story in here a few times, but it's worth repeating that we had an evening with her active alcoholic mother, my wife, who had been drinking for some time. And she had a habit every Christmas Eve, we'd go down to her sister's for Christmas Eve, and she would get drunk. And this particular Christmas Eve was toward the end of my I'd been in Al-Anon a number of years, so I was kind of like, wait a minute, I hadn't been in Al-Anon. This was the moment of clarity. And we came home, and she and Jennifer, my wife, were in a fight. And I was going to do my Henry Kissinger, my best Henry, who's old enough to remember Henry Kissinger first. It's a reference that, you know, a lot of people are like, who? When Henry? They were in a fight. And I kind of separated them and got them both calmed down. And I'm in the bathroom and I'm looking in the mirror and I'm going, "God, you're an amazing dad. How in the hell do you do this?" You know? And then suddenly this little 12-year-old girl is banging on my chest saying, "Why do you have to be the way you are?" And it just hit me like a ton of bricks in that moment. That I was causing more problems in the home than the drunk by far. I was raging. I was slamming doors. I was picking fights. I was trying to win some sort of argument. You know, alcoholism is kind of an argument. You know, it's one side's going, "No, no, 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 no. And the other side's going, maybe, but I have to, you know. And it's just this argument, you know. And I grew up in alcoholism, and by God, I was going to be right about this. And so when she did that is when I just went, I got it. Quit being so angry, you know. That was mainly, and I think a lot of men have come into 7 o'clock Let's Rock, which is this is my second home group. My new home group is a Thursday stag. I go to Leswood down in Corona del Mar because Ruth and I live in Seal Beach now, and it's about what are there 10 guys usually, you know. So it's a little bit different than this one, but you know, I came wandering in here when we were down in the other room down below, and I had checked out Al-Anon many, many years ago. I'm sober in AA as well. I'm gonna share openly. And I came in, I poked my head in, and it was the meeting when it was in the little fireplace room. And I poked my head in, it's probably Jack and Willie. And what I heard is a bunch of men whining about their mothers. I wouldn't be so screwed up if my mom hadn't blah, 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 you know. Fast forward to this moment, and I came over here and I said, could I come in and complain about my mother with you guys? And I've been complaining about her ever since. Who here has an active alcoholic in their home? Okay, I just want to remember you guys, because I think it's easy for us to forget what that's like. You know, I think you come here a while and you either eject your alcoholic or they get sober or something happens. And you know, I think it was about 7 or 8 of you, and my heart goes out to you. Because I never want to forget how insane that was, you know, just how high pitched that argument became, you know. Jim S, who used to go to this meeting, I would come in, he's somewhere, I'm sure, but I would come in and share about the fact that I hadn't thrown a coffee mug for 5 years. And Jim drew a little chip that said, hadn't thrown coffee mug in 5 years, and gave me the chip. And I don't want to forget that. Al-Anon is something that just grows for me. And I had this last weekend, we had a little party down at my house. I celebrated 38 years of sobriety. And it was, thank you, thank you. I always like to add, unmarred by a single day of growth. It's an old joke. But in Al-Anon, for some reason, when I came here 19 years ago, I could feel this was the remainder of the riddle, you know? And I don't know who it was that was sharing for their birthday, but what happened for me with Liza's mother is I woke up in the morning, one morning, and I went, huh, somebody else is in charge of whether I'm happy or not. It was just as simple as that. I just went, if she's in a bad mood, or she's drunk, or she's whatever, you know, but at the end of the drinking, I've got a laundry list of things, you know. And if she had done any of those, and then if Liza did anything, and then pretty soon it's, you know, a stranger driving down the freeway, if they did something, and just that whole sense of shame that comes around alcoholism. I grew up with an alcoholic dad, just like Liza grew up with an alcoholic mother and an alcoholic dad. I don't minimize being sober, still having the ism. I certainly did, the anger being part of it. And the shame around alcoholism, and that's why I always like to have people raise their hands that have an active alcoholic, is there's no walkathons for alcoholism. You know, we don't get out and do charity events for alcoholism. We hide it. You know, I shouldn't say we hide it. I think there's a tendency to hide it, you know, and I think the fact that I grew up in an alcoholic home, I always like to say I had the sense that there were winner families and there were loser families. And I like to talk about this a lot, that I can quickly go to the loser side of the equation still, you know, 71 years old, having had a great career, having a wonderful relationship, having wonderful friends. I can still go, God, they're winning and there's something wrong with you, you know? And you guys in here through that process of these steps somewhere, there they are, particularly steps 6 and 7. And for this alcoholic, steps 6 and 7 became the pivotal moment. And I'm going through some of this right now. I'll be real honest with you. Ruth and I have had some difficulties recently, and she's called me on some stuff, you know, and this is 12 years into a wonderful relationship, and she's wrong about all of it. So that I'd acknowledge that in public, dear. And there's a few things I'd like to tell you real quick. No. You want me to tell your wife something? No, no. And she was right. She was right. And you guys have taught me, I think it was the person with 40 years. Beth, is it? Yeah, that you mentioned somebody calling you on something. And this is a safe place for people to do this. We're not keeping score. I'm not keeping score. I never should say we. I'm not keeping score. And I hope that you don't keep score. You know, I trust that you don't. Paul and I, you know, are best friends. And this goes back a number of years. And I can't tell you how many times he and I have had, you know, have told each other, well, what about this? And what about that? And maybe, wait a minute, didn't you feel the same way 3 years ago when this happened? Maybe it's you, you know, maybe in that situation, you feel this way. It's not them, you know? So this step is step 6 and 7. And my children, you know, I'll another Liza story, you know, out of the mouths of babes. I knew to make an amends when I would get too angry, you know, and my temper would flare up, and I'd go, God, okay, I have to go in and make an amends. And so I would do that, you know, get mad, make an amends, get mad, make an amends. And finally, at age 8 or 9, she said, Dad, it's really nice of you to say you're sorry, but why don't you just stop doing it? You didn't see they high-fived each other. So this process that I came in here to get has worked, but it's always a work in progress. Straight vodka. No. Just kidding. It's just an alcoholic joke. So one of the things that I wanted to touch on when I came in here is, and I always like to do this because I do admit I'm a double whiner, as they say. And when I came in here at 18 years sober, I mean, I knew this program. I mean, I can quote that big book upside down and backwards. And I came in here, and I want to apologize to all the people that aren't double winners, for all the alcoholics that invade your program and think they know more than you. And I was one of those guys. So I'm just going to make a blanket apology that I was the guy that came in here and kind of wanted to teach you about the traditions because you didn't really have it right, you know, and there was a lot of that went on. What you gave me and what I continue to do in Al-Anon are the do's and the don'ts. And so I wanted to just talk about how the do's and the don'ts, and I had to write this down to remember all of it. So the do's and the don'ts today for me is don't lose your temper. Okay. I just talked about what I did with Liza in the bathroom, you know, when with her hitting me. My temper, I'm just going to go through this list of the do's and the don'ts. And you can all grade yourself as I'm going along. But that was the big one. Don't lose your temper for me. And it was the kind of thing that when I came in here, I knew how to stay sober. But what you were talking about was much more of a finely finessed thing. You know, how do you stay detached? What is sobriety in Al-Anon? You know, we talk about slips in Al-Anon. Really? You know, what's a slip for Roger might not be a slip for me. Roger actually may need to stand up for himself, but I need to stand up for myself less. You know, Paul should volunteer to be secretary more. I volunteer for everything. I should probably volunteer less. You know, so there's this get, you know, it's not one size fits all in here. And I found that very confusing as somebody that could, you know, I'm 38 years sober, throw me a parade, balloons, confetti, you know, and suddenly there was this hard part of learning how to get along with that. So that was one of the main ones. Don't lose your temper. The other one is try and push anybody but yourself. I always try to tell this story in my pitch. And this is a story when I first saw progress for myself in Al-Anon. And that was a Super Bowl party that we had. Some of you heard the story, so pardon me if you've heard it. But my wife, my active alcoholic wife, made this incredible coleslaw. And this coleslaw was just my favorite dish of hers, I think. And it had grapes in it, and it had some garlic, and it just was unbelievable cook, Liza's mom. And we're going to a Super Bowl party. I had been in Al-Anon, I don't know, 3 or 4 years, I think, at that point. And she was drunk, and she had a college friend over. And Paul, or some, I think it was Paul, had taught me that I could actually go to the, I said, God, I hate to go to any parties with her because she never leaves. Who here has an alcoholic that never leaves parties and whatnot? You know, they just keep talking and talking and talking, you know, and you're trying to drag them out of there. And Paul, I think, said, you know, you could drive separately. I was like, what? And miss all that arguing and victimhood and, you know, God, what am I going to have to complain about if I drive myself, you know? But this night, because of the college roommate, I didn't want to drive separately because I just didn't want my wife to drive drunk with this roommate. So anyway, she's making the coleslaw. I come into the kitchen and she doesn't see me. She's got her back to me and she's dropped all the coleslaw all over the kitchen floor. It's just spread out on the kitchen floor. And she doesn't see me. She kind of, you know, looks around and she just scoops all that coleslaw back into the bowl. Now, we have a Jack Russell Terrier. And I don't know if any of you have a Jack Russell or any Terrier, but the wiry hair that's all over the floor is just coming out of that coleslaw like nobody's business. You know, and so she just kind of gets it up and puts it back on the thing. And I, by then, hey, honey, time to go. And she says, yes, time to go. Okay, let's go. You know, and we pile into the car and she's in the back seat with her big proud bowl of coleslaw with all the hair. Her college roommate, me, I don't think Liza was in the car. And we got to the Super Bowl party, and I went and watched the game. And she took the coleslaw and put it on the table. And I don't know what happened. That's Al-Anon. I did see a lot of people doing this. I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not. It's always fun to tell that story because there's a lot of people who just, oh, I just can't stand it. So that's what I learned in here. Is I don't need to keep track of that night that Liza's talking about with the with her drama teacher and the dinner. I was so embarrassed for Liza. I was feeling her pain. I grew up with an alcoholic dad that when we went to church, I tell this story, he was one of the deacons at the church, and the little old lady coming out of the church went up to him in front of us, my mom, the whole family, and said, "Oh, how nice to see you sober today, Mr. Patterson." You know, so I'd had that shame, you know, and anybody here that's a child of an alcoholic, I'm sure can relate to that. So, or what story was I telling? Well, I don't remember now. Hang on a minute. Hang on a minute. Oh, the part, the drama teacher, the drama teacher. Oh my God. Thank you for helping me. Let's do the coleslaw again. That night I watched her, not only cause we were in a public place, she was drunk. And I just remember having that feeling of disassociation of people are going to judge her, not me. And it was a real moment of clarity. It was a moment of all the shame of childhood and all the connection to you and all the connection to wanting you to like me and all the connection of I have to accomplish big things to be somebody in the world. In moments like that, it would just kind of melt away, just slowly but surely, not like boom, I'm okay. I never have to have that feeling again, but to be comfortable with that feeling. That's what Al-Anon has done for me. Without a doubt, it has made me much more comfortable in my own skin. You know, that's been the main process that you've given me. There will always be a tendency towards needing outside things to validate me, and then to be able to kind of move into a place of it's fine. You're just fine the way you are. You're fine alone. You're fine with somebody. You're fine. I was sharing in a meeting this morning. It's because it's my birthday month. I'm leading a lot of meetings, and we were talking this morning in the Zoom meeting, and I said, you know, there comes a time, 71 now, where I realize that there's a lot of things I'm not going to get done. You know, I was supposed to be living, you know, on the beach in Kauai or someplace by now. And I was going to, you know, on and on and on, you know, and the beautiful thing is I do live at the beach. I do have a wonderful partner. I do have wonderful friends. It's just not the picture I had, you know? And it's better than the picture I had. And when you come from a family that you feel like I felt like was to lose your family, that's the option that doesn't occur to me. I have a lot of worst case scenario options in my head. You know, they talk about ACAs being, you know, always feeling like the other shoe's going to drop. It's because the other shoe did drop a lot. I remember driving my dad to jail. I remember having to go fish him out of bars. You know, Paul has stories that curl my hair. You know, you know, we don't have to outstory each other, but, you know, we've had that. So we come in here, came in here. And I immediately felt that safety with you. 7 o'clock, Let's Rock was where it all kind of came together for me because I've never trusted men. And that's another common thing, I think, when you have an alcoholic dad, the mom becomes the kind of the, I don't know what you want to call it, but the rock. Thank you, Liza. And And so I kind of always went towards women as somebody that I preferred their company, you know. And plus, they're prettier than most men. I don't know if you've noticed. And so just coming in here, they're high-fiving each other again. This is kind of, we got to break them up. Could you go sit over there? But just the fact that I could get comfortable trusting men's a big deal. Back to the do's and the don'ts. Make threats you don't intend on carrying out. Who here makes threats they don't intend on carrying out? Yeah, every parent, right? Every parent. Like, you went to your room. Oh, well, never mind. Paul was great because I, with Liza's mom, what time have we got? Oh, we're good, 8:15. With Liza's mom, every year, God damn it, we're going to get a divorce, you know, and you just keep doing this, blah, 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 until Jennifer, which is very funny woman, very, very smart, funny woman. She finally looked at me and she said, you know, you keep saying that, but you're still here. And I went, wow, she's right. I make threats I don't intend. I mean, it just became like warm soap water. And Paul, and I could understand this. He said, okay, Patterson, you don't get to use the D word for 1 year. And it was like, I can do that, you know? And so the abstinence part of Al-Anon for me was that type of thing. You know, these silly tricks that I can use as an Al-Anon to try to manipulate people. It's called testing love. You know, if I float this idea, this divorce idea, I see her reaction, I can do this, I can, you know, it's just innate in me at least. And so I'd have to go through this process of, okay, we're getting an argument. This is me not using the D word. This is me not using the D word. And so, some of you that have active alcoholics, this, you might relate to this. You know, I would have to do the same thing around counting my wife's booze, you know, and there would be bottles and bottles of wine. She was a Chardonnay drinker. And, you know, I would get the bottles out of the recycle bin and I'd pile them up on the sink. You know, there'd be 20 bottles. You know, that was like a week's worth. And she'd take them and put them back in the recycle bin, you know. And then I finally, when somebody got me clear about that, I would open the refrigerator door and I knew right where her wine was. And I knew it would be either at the top or the bottom or new bottle, or, you know, we can just check that out and just know exactly what's going on, you know. And I would open the refrigerator and go, this is me not looking at the wine. This is me not looking at the wine. Get the milk. This is me not looking at the wine. I did it. And it was just simple things like that, that these do's and don'ts taught me. I just wanted to follow this direction without having to ask why. Well, why? Well, wait a minute. You know, the hardest decision I ever made, and some of you people that are living with active alcoholism, and it's scary to even say this in front of Liza, was letting my wife drive her drunk to school once in a while. There was no option, you know? And a couple of times there were, you know, there was a bad outcome from that. She blew out some tires of the car and she went up into the school and both tires blown. What happened out there, John? So, you know, these things that come up at these do's and don'ts are very important to me. Don't be a doormat. Okay, here are the do's. Just in time. I think probably the biggest one for me, I'll probably say that with a lot of these, but the biggest one for me is do forgive. And the biggest forgiveness is to myself. when I did my fourth step with Paul, I was shocked, having done an AA fourth step where I, you know, I had to write down, I stole this and I did that, and I, you know, have to go make amends for this and that and the other thing. When I came up with those four columns, which is what I used, I'm resentful at Patrick. You know, the cause. He didn't stick up for his mom when his dad was drunk, you know. And I was able to go through and just see, wow, you have a lot of anger turned inward, a lot of anger at myself. And one of the best lines I came to in the big book was that remorse is a resentment against myself. And I don't know about you, but that was like a present that just keeps on giving, that I don't get to have resentments. That's part of my program. And that includes the resentments against me, what I did wrong, choices I made, things that I could have or would have or should have done, particularly around, you know, kids and whatnot. So that's one of my favorite ones. And then last but not least, I'm going to wrap it up here, is play, find recreation and hobbies. And I want to take a moment to acknowledge one of our brothers that left us recently, and that's Dublin Galleon. And Dublin was such a joy to be around, and I got to know him in this this meeting, and he and I became pretty good friends, and we played in a little band together. And Dublin was just one of those infectious guys. In fact, I got him a coffee mug because I used to go to his art salon that he did with Jack up in Portland. And the coffee mug says, "Your enthusiasm scares people." Because he would get into something, he was all in, you know, walking 70 miles for his birthday and, you know, taking up the fiddle. He would go to the retreat, the offsite, and we'd watch other people playing instruments. He said, "God damn it, I want to be a part of the instrument thing." And this is years ago, 15, 20 years ago. Roger playing the banjo, you know, Steve playing the guitar. And by God, he picked up that fiddle, and pretty soon he was joining them. And I was doing the drums. I'm a drummer. And he said, "Come on, Patrick, let's be in a band together." I'm like, "Oh my God, are you kidding me?" You know? But pretty soon I'm in a garage somewhere with a buddy of his, and we're banging out little tunes. It didn't matter if anybody wanted to listen to it or not. We're having a ball, you know, these old guys. And so this play, find recreation and hobbies thing. It's one of the big deals for me was losing my story. Losing all the criteria I've put on myself over the years. You're this kind of guy. You can draw, but you can't sing. You do this, but you don't do that. You're like this, you're sensitive. You're just all that crap. You guys have taught me that there's an opportunity to go, "Really? Are you? Is there a reason you want to like double down on that certain personality trait?" And what Dublin taught me to do, and I know I'm running out of time here, is to say yes. And a couple of them that came up real quickly, I'm going to run through, was the Al-Anon skit, like the Pat did at one of the retreats, or not the retreat, but the what's it called, Pat? The roundup. And years ago, Lisa, who came to some of our meetings, "Hey, we need more guys for the skit. There aren't enough guys. They're women, but they're guys. We're going to do American Idol, and you could be Simon Cowell." And I was like, "I don't do that. I'm not a in front of the camera guy. I'm a behind the camera." I just had all this stuff. And I thought, well, or you could go home to your drunk wife, or be with these people. I said, "You know what? Let's do it." And before I knew it, I'm up on a stage and people are clapping and I'm kind of going, "This is kind of cool," you know? And I got into it, you know, and it's given me kind of a third or fourth career that I get to do this on camera stuff. So if you're new here, if you're in the middle of the worst situation you can imagine, please stay. You do not have to do this alone ever again. Thank you.